All right. I call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 5:22 p.m. on Wednesday, February 2nd. Members present here in the room are Representatives Coffin, McCarty, and myself, Chair Sponholz. We have online today, we have Co-Chair Fields and Representative Snyder. So we do have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome. Thank you for joining us, Representative Nelson. Thank you so much to our secretary today, Leah Fraser, who is joining us remotely, and our LIO moderator, Nate Williams. Reminder to everybody to be sure to speak into your microphone, especially since we have a couple of committee members online today, but it also helps our record keepers make sure the minutes are accurate moving forward. If you haven't already, go ahead and silence your cell phones. We have two items on our agenda today. The first one is Senate Bill 131, workers' compensation disability for firefighters, including some invited testimony, and a first hearing on Senate Bill 11, community property trust, with invited testimony as well. All right, and with that, we're going to go ahead and get started with Senate Bill 131, workers' compensation disability for firefighters, sponsored by Senator Holland, who is here with his aide, Nikki Rose. All right, and if you can go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and begin with your presentation. This bill, I will just remind everybody on the committee, is very similar to if maybe not exactly the same as Representative Kaufman's bill. We've heard this bill. We're pretty comfortable with it, but I want to give Senator Holland and his aide a chance to present their bill.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman, committee members.
I think you can just call me Chair.
Thank you, Chair, committee members. My name is Roger Holland, Alaska State Senate District N. I have staff with me today, Nikki Rose. She'll read the sponsor statement, brief sectional analysis. And then we'll have a short PowerPoint presentation. I believe you might have already seen some version of this. We'll go through. If you have any questions, feel free. We'll slow down a little bit. But the subject of breast cancer coverage for fire service members initially struck me as a complicated topic. A quick scan of scientific studies includes discussions of polyfluoroalkyl compounds and perfluorooctanoic substances and their effects on human tissues. I was pretty overwhelmed. But the more we looked at the subject, the simpler and clearer the argument became. I hope we're able to convey to you what a clear and justified request this is. Thank you, Chair.
All right, you want to introduce yourself for the record, Ms. Rose?
Yes, for the record, my name is Nikki Rose, staff to Senator Holland. I'm going to be reading the sponsor statement today. Can everyone hear me okay?
We can hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Terrific. Our sponsor statement reads, "Firefighting is an inherently dangerous job. It is important that workers' compensation insurance provides coverage for the inherent risk in that job. But right now, there is a hole in that coverage, and that is breast cancer. This bill would add breast cancer to the list of presumed disability coverages for firefighters, so long as the firefighter could establish medically that the breast cancer was caused by work as a firefighter. Instances of cancer in firefighters is shown to be higher than that of the general populations. Studies that have evaluated cancer risk among women firefighters suggest women firefighters, like their male co-workers, may be at an elevated risk for their overall cancer incidence. These studies have suggested that women firefighters, this would protect not only women because exposures to the carcinogenic chemicals, which is sometimes necessary in the course of a firefighter's job, does not discriminate based on sex and gender. Exposure to these chemicals may be mitigated, but not eliminated, through protective equipment. Thank you for your consideration today for the addition of breast cancer to the list of presumed disability coverages for firefighters."
All right, thank you. And the chair also notes that men can get breast cancer as well, just for the committee's information. All right, and if you want to proceed with your presentation, Senator Holland, that'd be great.
I believe Nikki will go over the sectional analysis.
Briefly.
Thank you, Chair. This is Nikki Rose for the record. Our sectional analysis is very brief. It establishes this act relating to the presumption of compensability for disabilities resulting from certain diseases for firefighters. Section 1, AS 23.30.121B, relating to the list of coverages for firefighters, is amended by adding the term breast cancer to the list of AS 23.30.121B, Section 2, clarifies this change applies to claims made on or after the effective date of this act. Thank you.
All right, go ahead.
All right, thank you, Chair. I appreciate
and,
your...
And I just want to just clarify as well that we're going to do this pretty quickly.
Quickly.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate you reminding everyone that breast cancer is not limited to women. And actually, that's what really made this such an easy argument, because even though women at the time that I first looked at this made up about 4% of the workforce and firefighters in Alaska, so it's hard to make a statistical decision on that. Would breast cancer coverage be justified? But when you look at the fact that if you're a male firefighter in the firefighter service, you're 7.5 more times likely to die of breast cancer than their male counterparts not in the fire service. So we talked about firefighting being an inherently dangerous job, and there's an oversight, breast cancer. So SB 131 would add breast cancer to the list of presumed disability coverages. And we talked about instances of cancer in firefighters is shown to be higher than that of the general public. That's why we have this list of presumed disability coverages. And these studies also suggest women firefighters may be at an elevated incidence of risk for breast cancer.
And so, Representative Shragi joined us at 5:25 p.m. Go ahead.
In the general population, less than 1% of males are likely to develop breast cancer in their lifetime. But male firefighters are 7.5 times more likely to die from breast cancer than their non-fire service counterparts. The same mechanism that would increase, that would cause increases in breast cancer in men is thought to result in proportional increases in risk among women. In general, in the general population, 1 in 8 women will likely contract breast cancer in their lifetime. This bill protects not only women because exposure to carcinogenic chemicals, which often occurs in the normal course of a firefighter's job, does not discriminate based on sex or gender. Presumptive laws are regulations that assume a given disease is linked by default to a specific occupation. This means that when someone is diagnosed with an illness covered under a presumptive law, they're automatically entitled to a disability or workers' comp, medical expense coverage, and medical leave provided they meet certain criteria. We discuss those criteria. Basically, it comes down to, we'll just stick with the slides. With presumptive laws, to get these benefits, firefighters and other workers may have to prove that their line of work caused their disease. The current list of presumptive diseases for firefighting in Alaska, respiratory disease, cardiovascular events, primary brain cancer, malignant melanoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, bladder cancer, ureter cancer, kidney cancer, and prostate cancer. So we talked about presumptive laws and what are those criteria. And this is where it's we may have more work to do in this area. The firefighter must have been a firefighter for at least 7 years, must have had an initial and annual medical exam showing no evidence of this disease for that 7 years, be able to demonstrate exposure to a known carcinogen while in a fire service, and at minimum be certified as a firefighter. And you can have conflicts with that if the firefighter has a history of use of tobacco products or lifestyle decisions, physical fitness and weight, hereditary factors, all that gets into would they actually qualify for a disability coverage. Some post-employment coverage is available, and that's like once you leave the fire service, you may actually be able to accrue disability coverage for, it says 3 months accrued for every year in service. 3 months accrued for every year in service, a 5-year maximum. So 14 states include breast cancer and presumptive laws. I've got to admit, I've got to update this slide and check. This is from last session. But there's the list, and we would sure appreciate if y'all would consider helping us add Alaska as number 15. And that concludes the slideshow.
All right.
Concludes our presentation, I believe.
Fantastic. Do we have any questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Nelson? No? All right. Any questions? Representative Snyder, Representative Fields, any questions? All right, go ahead, Rep. Fields.
Thanks, through the chair. I don't have a question. I do want to thank the bill sponsor and also our colleague, Representative Kaufman, for introducing these companion bills. It's just a reality that cancer is more likely for firefighters, and we should recognize that given the services they do every day. Thanks.
All right.
A brief comment, Chair? And I don't know if Lori Wingfire is available. I don't see she made it, but I'll just mention.
Did you want to be recognized by the chair before you continue speaking?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
A brief comment, Chair.
Yeah, I've got the gavel. Thanks. All right. Go ahead.
As I mentioned, I'm not sure if Commissioner Wingfire made it, but she was going to speak to this is workers' comp coverage. This is coverage firefighters pay for themselves, and it's based on their salary. And there's a zero fiscal note on this legislation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We do have Lori Wingfire, the director of the Division of Insurance, available for questions. And we also have Director Charles Collins with the Division of Workers' Compensation available with us on Teams if there are any questions. All right. Are there any questions for any of these folks? All right. If not, I will move on. Thank you very much for your presentation. We'll go to invited testimony. We have Justin Mack with the Alaska Professional Firefighter Association available for to make some testimony. Mr. Mack?
Hello. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
All right. For the record, my name is Justin Mack. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. We represent about 500 fire and EMS professionals. I'm speaking in support of SB 131. I currently work for the Anchorage Fire Department. I've been on for 10 years and currently serve as a captain. I also serve as state director for the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, which is a peer-to-peer cancer support program. For the most part, being a firefighter is unique but routine. The study, we study and do chores at the station. We give station tours and provide community outreach. We respond to medical calls and fire alarms. The job is routine until it's not. When the tones go off at 2 a.m. and 3 or 4 minutes later, we find ourselves in a building and we've never been in before with heavy smoke and fire all around and zero visibility. The calls are routine until the report of multiple victims trapped in a multifamily structure, and you and your crew are the difference in whether the victims will see another day. While these calls are anything but routine, it is the career we have chose and the one we love to do. We all know that this career can be dangerous. It's simply not safe to walk into a burning building. What I learned early in my career is that good training and tactics can help keep you safe. What I failed to understand is that no matter how careful you are, and even if we follow every known standard operating guideline, even if we do the absolute best decontamination of ourselves and our equipment, and even if we wear the most up-to-date PPE, we will be exposed to some of the worst chemicals on Earth. These chemicals permeate through our gear, they make their way into our pores, and they linger. It's the reason that after a significant structure fire, you smell it on yourself for days after you take a shower, as those pores open up and start to release some of those chemicals. Alaska's workers' compensation usually requires that you tie an injury to a specific event. In the case of cancer, it's very hard to say which structure fire may have caused the cancer, but study after study show that firefighters have a significant increase in cancer rates when compared to the general public. There is an unusual phenomenon in the fire service. We come into the fire service as some of the healthiest amongst the population, and we often retire as some of the unhealthiest. 20 to 30 years of this job takes a toll, and for some, that's a life-changing cancer diagnosis. SB 131 is a step in the right direction in advocating for public safety members who, while knowing the risks, continue to respond at 2 a.m. I strongly urge support of SB 131 and thank the committee for your time.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today. We appreciate it, and also for your service through the as a firefighter, as well as all of your community service to your peers and improving the profession, Mr. Mack. Are there any questions for Mr. Mack or any of our other folks that are available for questions? No. Go ahead.
Yes. Through the chair, Mr. Mack, the question I have is, you made comment to that, and it's also in the presentation of documentation of firefighters by firefighters with app, well, it doesn't say with apps, but as an important element to verify exposure to a carcinogen. What is your current procedure and what you see in the industry of documentation? And do you believe that that is a phrase that should be in the bill?
If you could just clarify, through the chair, if you could just clarify which section you're referring to or what language specifically you're referring to. I think I cut out for the first part of that.
Representative McCarty.
So through the chair, it's not language in the bill currently, but what I'm hearing is question or that of documentation by firefighters so that if they have cancer, that they could have documentation already in place from the years of service to show they've had carcinogen exposure at different fires. Do you mm-hmm. think that's important that it should be in the bill to help firefighters to quickly mitigate the process of workers' comp?
Yeah, I do believe that through our reporting, we do structure fire reporting for every call that we go on, but specifically for structure fires, there's an inherent understanding of a long list of chemicals that you'd be known to reasonably expected to have been exposed to in a structure fire. The issue that states often run into with workers' compensation is this language of tying it to one specific event. And what presumptive does is it takes your career, it takes the documentation that you do have through your reporting, and we can make a reasonable assumption that this person who got cancer at a younger age or a very rare type of cancer. This is actually a really personal issue for me. My mother-in-law was a 25-year firefighter with Anchorage, and she developed her career was cut short. She developed a rare blood cancer and was one of the bigger or first people to go through some of this presumptive fight. And we worked out some of the kinks in a case like that, but the documentation that we did have, the run call, the call volume that she had over 25 years was helpful, but the presumptive legislation and just making the assumption is what was really beneficial in getting her covered through work comp.
All right. And do you, Mr. Mack, do you want to talk a little bit about the kinds of carcinogens that are sort of commonly known to be present in a typical structure fire?
I could, through the chair, if it would be more appropriate. I don't want to miss anything or add anything, but if you're okay with it, I'll send you a comprehensive list of the ones that we are reasonably expected to call exposed to be exposed to, and then some of the ones that we are thought to be exposed to. And then also for each one of those chemicals, it'll say what the household items you would find those in, and then also what types of cancers specifically that those relate to.
Thank you. I think that'd be really helpful. We'll share that with the committee. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair to Mr. Mack, is it just assumed when you're responding to, say, a house fire compared to another structure fire that you're going to be exposed to certain chemicals, or do you test afterwards and say, hey, these are what we were exposed to, or you know, kind of how does that work for documentation's sake?
Yeah, so it is assumed. We don't typically do testing, although there's been a handful of studies, and I'm happy to send some information on this study as well. One of the studies they did was they took a firefighter, they put them through a structure fire using all of the latest up-to-date PPE procedures, decon, and then they did urinary testing for a week following that structure fire, and they were picking up a decreasing amount, but a notable amount of carcinogens just in the urine. Finding it on the skin was pretty common for a couple of days, but in the urine, for, I believe it was 5 to 7 days. I'll send the information on that study, but, there's no testing that we do after, but there has been studies where they have tested after a structure fire and were able to find those carcinogens.
All right. Do you have a follow-up?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair to Mr. Mack, is it more, and earlier in your statements, you were saying, you know, you can have the best PPE and the best decon, and yeah, but still have it, you know, on your spore, on your skin. Is that more of a problem with decontamination or the equipment, like to kind of mitigate those factors, or is it just over 25 years, you're more than likely going to have it?
So some of these carcinogens permeate through not only your gear, and the multiple layers associated with that, for every 1 degree increase in body temperature, you see a 400% increase in pore size and absorption. And so when you're operating in a structure fire, 500 to 1,000 degrees, your body temperature certainly doesn't get that high, but it does get elevated. Your pores are open, and that's when these carcinogens are in the air going through directly through our gear and directly into our pores. And, my wife would comment on it after a structure fire the next day at home taking a shower, even though I did decon at work at the station. I get home and take a shower, and you can smell it as those pores begin to open up. It's still coming off you. So the decon is in place. The PPE is in place. We are absolutely aware that this exists, and we're trying to make improvements in PPE, and we have made significant improvements in PPE, specifically with our SCBAs. But it's still a risk. We know it's there. There's things that we can do. We can try and limit exposure. But the fact of the matter is, if there's a fire in someone's house or there's rescue that needs to be done, we're going to go into it.
All right.
Another
one problem. More?
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Mack, I appreciate it. I've been through a few different decon lines. You could definitely tell when it's effective or when it's not. I appreciate what you've been through, and thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think we know that there are limits to modern technology's ability to protect us from smoke and chemicals that are very small, and the evidence on this matter is pretty substantial. When you see male firefighters that are 7.5 times more likely to get a breast cancer, which is a very rare disease, cancer for a male to get in the general population, although it does happen. There's some pretty important evidence, and I really appreciate the bill sponsor for bringing this forward. Are there any additional questions? I will just say then as well that even if women are only 4% of firefighters, I would still say that our increased risk of likelihood of getting breast cancer in the first place makes women more likely as we continue to become, larger and larger percentage of the firefighting population. It means that women have an outsized, sort of experience of breast cancer, increased breast cancer risk as well. So even if it was only 4%, that would be enough for me, candidly. So thank you very much for that. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside for tonight, and we'll pick it up again at a future date. Thank you very much for introducing this bill and for your time tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Funnels.
All right. And with that, we're going to go ahead and we're going to move over to Senate Bill 11. With Senator Tom Begich on community property trusts. Do you have a presentation today, Senator?
All right. For the record, Senator Tom Begich, District D. Yes, I do, Madam Chair.
All right, go ahead.
I'm happy to present it to you. First, Madam Chair, again, for the record, Senator Tom Begich, District J, downtown Anchorage. And thank you for taking the time to consider Senate Bill 11, community property trusts. This is a bill that was brought to our attention, an issue that was brought to our attention by constituents some time ago. We were lucky enough to have it heard in the Senate by both the Labor and Commerce Committee, and heard it by two committees, and then have the bill move to the floor and pass out with bipartisan support. Glad to have it in front of you now. With me is Trevor Bailey, and that's B-A-I-L-L-Y for the record. L-Y for the record.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Bailey, LL.
We call him LL instead of 007, mm-hmm. Our figured agent on this bill. I'm going to just talk to you a little bit about what the bill does to familiarize you with it and sort of its history, because the bill corrects an issue from a piece of legislation from now 24 years ago. So back in 1997, it was HB 199, proposed by Representative Joe Ryan. That bill allowed Alaska. We had just passed a major trusts legislation that had been signed into law prior to this bill in 1997, prior to HB 199 passing into law. And what the bill does is it offers an opportunity for a couple to put their assets into a community trust. It's important for me to read you a line from that because this is a direct quote from Representative Ryan at the time testifying in favor of the bill. He said, as one of the elements that was positive about why he was doing this, when one of the partners dies, the basis is what for the value of the asset is that when it was purchased, any appreciation of that asset on behalf of the estate of the person who's died has no tax liability. And the reason I'm reading that kind of convoluted quote is to point out the fact that he indicated appreciation of the asset was something that was critical in his understanding of what he was trying to do. So if I can just paint a picture for you, if you have a married couple, they have assets, they age together for 25 years, they put those assets in a community trust, they age together for 25 years, one dies before the other, you would assume that the value of the asset in the community trust would include the appreciation as one of those assets. And that's what the intent was back in 1997. Regretfully, a recent court decision created ambiguity about that intent, indicating that the value of the asset was the value at the time of the community trust, as opposed to being the value of the asset accrued over time. So this bill is meant to clarify that, since the court seemed to be confused by what was intended by the original author of the bill. It's a simple, very, very simple two-page bill. It effectively clarifies the income and appreciation combined is what was intended, and that if enacted, it basically incorporates those elements of the Uniform Marital Property Act that we've already said that we would incorporate. It is, remember, it's an elect-in system. This is not mandatory like some of the community property states. We aren't that kind of state. So it's an elect-in option. And finally, there's a savings clause in the bill. And the reason you have the savings clause is to not create constitutional issues with retroactivity, because you're effectively reminding people of what the meaning was back when the law passed. So it effectively is designed that any litigation that may be pending or that may be enact any litigation entered prior to this bill becoming law would not be affected by the bill. So in other words, it tries to avoid the problem we generally have with retroactivity is, you know, it's to correct a current litigation. This is not designed to do that. So it fixes a mistake in interpretation. And the court often does look to the legislature when there's an ambiguity in any interpretation to correct or clarify that ambiguity. That's what this bill does. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Trevor to read the full sponsor statement that takes my convoluted words and puts it in really sensible language, and then go through the sectional. And then at that time, open for questions, if that's all right, Madam Chair.
All right. Mr. Double L. Bailey, proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Trevor Bailey with two L's, staff to Senator Begich, and I'm going to go into the sponsor statement first. So, Alaska is a state with favorable trust laws and favorable laws for property ownership between spouses. The state allows for often community property ownership between married spouses. Community property owners can provide tremendous tax advantages to spouses. In Alaska, residents can enter into community property agreements, and residents and non-residents alike can enter into Alaska community property trusts. The benefits the individuals entering these agreements, the benefits include individuals entering these agreements, the trust industry of Alaska, increases in deposits to Alaska banks, and through revenue generated by the formation of the new trust, the state of Alaska. Community property is simply a way to joint own a property. A common way to enter a community property agreement is in conjunction with one spouse. Each party must elect into this agreement, and the agreement provides most commonly equal ownership and management of specific property. Currently, community property has a significant tax advantage. When a spouse dies, community property is placed into a tax category that allows for tax advantages when the property is sold. To realize these advantages, appreciation and income in a trust must be characterized as community property. The default rule has generally been appreciation and income on community property will be characterized as community property, unless otherwise declared in the community property trust. Trust attorneys have attested to this interpretation. However, recent court rulings have created an ambiguous understanding of this general criterion. This legislation, consistent with industry understandings of trusts, seeks to clarify and clearly define community property as including appreciation and income on community property. Senate Bill 11 establishes a clear definition of appreciation of income as community property as intended by the Community Property Trust Act. Portions of this legislation also have retroactive effective date to May 23rd, 1998. Chair, if I may, can I move into the sectional?
Go ahead.
So Section 1 clarifies intent of subsection H under Alaska Statutes 34.77.030 to ensure any financial gains directly related to appreciation of community property trusts are treated as community property unless legal trust documents clearly state otherwise. Section 2 adds a new subsection under AS 34.77.030 to retroactively apply the above changes in statute to community property trust agreements established on or after May 23, 1998. This section also applies to existing, applies an existing statutory definition of community property trust. Section 3 is the savings clause, as Senator Begich mentioned, and it asserts that Section 2 of this legislation does not impact court actions or proceedings that began before the effective date. Section 4 is the retroactivity clause that makes Section 1 of this Act retroactive to May 23, 1998. And Section 5 makes Sections 1 and 4 of this Act take effect immediately.
All right. Thank you very much. And if I understand the way that this is crafted, the idea is that the bill as it's written wouldn't nullify previous court action that's already been undertaken, but it would allow community property trusts that exist now to have that appreciation be incorporated into the value moving forward. Is that a correct statement?
To the chair, Senator Begich, that is correct.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for the bill's sponsor before we move into invited testimony? All right, Representative McCarty.
Thank you. Through the chair, in the sponsor statement, there's a comment made. First paragraph, fourth line, community property agreements and residents and non-residents can enter into Alaska Community Property Trust. Mm-hmm. So how far reaching does non-residents fit into this ability to be involved in this?
Through the chair, for the record, Senator Tom Begich to Representative McCarty. That's already allowed under the law and has been since 1998. So the residents and non-residents, what it's designed for in the, some of the backup material speaks to this, including the dialogue from Representative Ryan, which I reviewed again just before I came up here to the table, but he talks about how there are a limited number of states that are mandatory community property states and a number of other states that are not, and that for those 41 other states at the time, the ability for them to come up here and be able to take advantage of our laws has always been on the books since we passed the original Community Act Trust. It's just otherwise we'd probably be in violation of the Commerce Clause of the federal Constitution. So it mentions residents and non-residents because the community property trusts are open. Interestingly enough, what it also leads to, though, is an enhanced ability for people who don't live in the state to take advantage of our community property trust law, which increases the income into the state of Alaska. It also provides, as the bill indicated, some support for our banking systems up here. It makes us an attractive place to enter into your community trust if you wish to. So, I don't want to compare it to Delaware in that regard, but it is similar to that. We have pretty strong community trust law here, protections for people, et cetera. But what this does is it creates an incentive. And by not having this law in place and having the ambiguity, it actually acts as a disincentive and brings people to a place where they're disinclined to come to Alaska to necessarily start their community trust if they choose to have one.
Do you follow it?
No. Okay. You're well said.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any other questions on this topic, Representative Shaggy?
Yeah, thank you. Could you just explain to me the effective date?
Oh, yes. Through the chair, Senator Tom Begich, through the chair to Representative Shaggy, there are two effective dates in the bill. The first effective date which is the Section 4, is the retroactivity clause. That is an effective date. The second only deals with Sections 1 and 4 of the Act to make sure that the retroactivity becomes effective on a passage of the effective date. In other words, you have to have a trigger to make the retroactivity become effective. And in Section 1, you don't need an effective date for the other two. So just 1 and 4 are immediate.
Follow up, if I may. To clarify, why beginning in 1998? I think I might have missed something.
Oh, it's the same. Sorry, through the chair, Senator Begich, for the record, Representative Shragi, that's the date that we passed the law originally. It's the date the law became effective immediately. It's not the date we passed the state.
Makes sense now.
I figured I may have missed something. Thank you very much.
It's always good to make sure we properly understand the legislation before us. I appreciate that. All right. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions?
I do have a comment before you go to testimony.
All right. I want to make sure that I give Representative Snyder and Co-Chair Fields a chance to ask any questions if they have any.
Thank you, Chair. This is Rep. Snyder. No questions at this point.
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
All right, great. Did you want to go ahead and make a remark before we move to invited testimony?
Yes. One of the invited testifiers who may or may not be online, Linda Hubert, does have a financial relationship in a trust relationship with one member of my staff. I just wanted to put that on the record. Mm-hmm. That has had no impact, nor was it a reason why this legislation was considered. But I wanted to make sure that you understood that.
All right, great. And Linda Hurlbert is not online today, and I actually happen to know her from my professional career before joining the legislature. I was a member of the Anchorage Estate Planning Council as part of my profession. All right, first up then, thank you very much, Senator Begich and Mr. Bailey. First up, we will go to Matthew Blattmacher with the Peak Trust Company. Mr. Blattmacher, introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair, thank you. This is Matthew Blattmacher, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, last name Ethan Bravo, L-A-T-T-M-A-C-H-R, with Peak Trust Company in Anchorage. I can keep my testimony short unless there are specific questions for me. This bill is supported by not only myself personally, but the organization that I represent. There are thousands, if not tens of thousands, of Alaskans who have utilized this provision in Alaska statutes for the last, nearly 25 years. And the intent of all of those plans was that accumulation of income and appreciation would be included in community property. And this bill just, again, as Senator Begich eloquently explained, corrects an error and gets us back to what was originally intended. Thank you.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Blattmacher? All right. Mr. Blattmacher, any relationship to Jonathan Blattmacher?
Yes, he is my uncle.
All right. Thank you. He and I have done some work together. All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today. All right. Next up, we're going to go to Abigail O'Connor with the Alaska Trust and Estate Professionals. Ms. O'Connor, you might be on mute.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, through the chair. This is Abigail O'Connor. I'm an attorney in Anchorage with O'Connor Law, and I also am affiliated with Alaska Trust and Estates Professional, Inc., which is an organization that Mr. Blattmacher also is affiliated with. I am calling in support of this bill regarding community property. I represent numerous clients in Alaska who have community property trusts, and the having appreciation and income also be community property is a critical element of the whole community property structure and planning. Without it, really, there's not a whole lot of point to doing it. So it is critical that appreciation and income also be community property. I'm very much in support of this bill because I think it takes something that right now under the case that came out and the court ruling, we have to make sure that every trust has this language in it, which is fine going forward, but think of all the trusts that were created before this time that may not have that language in it, and it solves that problem for those Alaskans. So I am fully in support of this bill.
All right. Thank you very much for that testimony. Are there any questions for Ms. O'Connor? All right. Looks like we have no questions for Ms. O'Connor. And with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up our testimony to our hearing today. Amendments for Senate Bill 131 and Senate Bill 11. Each of these bills are due on Friday, February 11th at 5 p.m. That wraps up our business this afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. Our next meeting is scheduled for Friday, February 4th at 9 a.m. here in Barnes 124. We're going to meet a little bit early so that we can accommodate our congressional delegation who's going to be calling in from the East Coast to talk about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Thanks as well to our secretary today, Leah Frazier, and our LAO moderator, Nate Williams. This meeting, the House Labor and Commerce Committee, is adjourned at 6:03 p.m.